people love the underdog, the pivot, the story of our farm and our family. We're not geniuses by any means. Other people can definitely do this. We just have a pretty strong passion, which is a blessing.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
A lot of farmers have been talking about pivoting, about how they kind of change from being in a monocropping kind of situation and looking at other alternatives. People have so many opinions on that. And part of that is to whether or not you have the opportunity to vertically integrate. But we're going to talk about one of those stories today, and it starts in the middle of the country, in the Midwest, in Michigan. And I'm happy to welcome Claire Smith. Claire, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat with you all things alternative farming.
Well, you know what? We've got a couple things in common. I'm from the Midwest too, and both our fathers were farmers. But you've added to your own title. You refer to yourself as the maker, baker, founder. You've got a connection with your farm, with the product that you're producing and marketing, and that product, interesting, healthy product, but it connects back to alternative grains that you're able to produce on your farm. Fill the gaps in for me there.
Yeah, of course.
What came first, the granola or the grains?
So the grain came first. So we're a seventh generation farm, and we've been growing the traditional cash crops of our area. So we're in southern Michigan on about 2,300 acres. And so the traditional cash crops in our area are corn, wheat, and soybeans. And so we've been growing those for a very long time. But in about 2013, 2014 timeframe, my dad was looking at the market and the prices, and soybean and corn just kind of kept declining. So he faced a choice, you know, do something different, and, you know, save the farm before we had to start selling off land or anything, or stick with tradition and kind of see where that would take. So he decided to try growing this new ancient grain, as they say, teff, and that's originally from Ethiopia. Lots of fiber, calcium, iron, nutrient dense, gluten-free, all these really good for you. It's a really good for you grain. So we started growing it in 2015, and it's really grown from there. So we started out thinking we would sell it to Ethiopian restaurants, because they make their bread out of it in Jira. But it pretty quickly changed when we just couldn't get a lot of traction. And I know I'm kind of skipping some pieces that I'm sure will fill in the gaps later, but long story short, I took the ancient grain, teff, and put it into an artisan handmade granola and started producing it and selling to grocery stores, online, farmers markets, the whole thing. So yeah. So now we've got kind of two things going on. Yeah.
So describe teff to me. I don't know. If you set a bowl of teff in front of me, I wouldn't know what it looks like. So,
yeah. So I'll talk about the plant first. The plant is in the grass family. And so it's pretty tall. So it's going to be about 3 feet high at full height. And then all the grains are clustered at the top, similar to wheat, but it is naturally gluten-free. And so when it's fully mature, the teff is quite dense. And so the whole plant falls over. And so a field of mature teff ready to be harvested just looks like a whole bunch of overgrown grass laying on its side. And so when you actually harvest it and, you know, get to that bowl of teff that you're talking about, you're looking at the world's tiniest grain. So it's half the size of a poppy seed. And the variety that we grow is dark brown teff or red teff or brown teff. They're the same. And it's just this really rich brownish reddish color. But it's very, very small, very small.
Wow. That's incredible. So your dad was one of these farmers in the Midwest, like so many, and probably had heard everybody criticizing monocropping and, you know, corn, soybeans, corn, soybeans. And I almost get a little tired of all the criticisms, especially from both coasts, that keep looking at the Midwest and feel they're experts on it and maybe aren't even aware that people are looking at alternatives and adjusting and changing and so forth. But one of the big problems with corn and soybeans in the last few years, the margins have not been very good. People had to put a lot of money into mm-hmm. equipment and their farming, and the price has just been barely enough and sometimes not enough at all in recent years. So I understand wanting to figure out, how do I get out of this, or how do I break this? How do I stop being so dependent on just being corn and soybeans? So what did your dad do? I mean, did he go to Extension Service or research, or where did he find TEF and think, ought to give this a try?
Well, that's a bit of a kind of an odd story. A family friend of ours actually works in Africa in agriculture in Zambia, Zimbabwe, Ethiopia area. So he was traveling around there. And when he heard about our corn and soybean woes, you know, rising input costs and decreasing margins, on and off kind of hand comment, he said, well, there's this grain TEF, like Ethiopians grow it everywhere and there's a ban on exporting. So you might want to look into growing TEF. And we found that no one east of the Mississippi is growing it for human consumption. So they're making TEF hay out of it. A lot of farmers are making TEF hay because of the high protein content, especially in the South, because it's so warm down there. But we didn't know anybody who had grown it at all. And now we've worked, since we've been working with the Michigan State University Extension Services, we found that a handful of people, you know, like five people in Michigan, are growing it for that forage. But we are the ones growing it for human consumption. So it's a little bit different how you grow it and when you're cutting it and the equipment that goes into it. But we just, in terms of how we started, we kind of just did the best that we could, read a lot about it. But of course, there's nothing like hands-on experience. So the first year we planted 33 acres and it actually came up just beautifully. I remember that first year, the drill broke. We were using a drill at the time and you barely, you know, it's just an eighth of an inch deep that we're drilling it down. But the drill broke, classic farming problem. And so my younger brother and I were plopped onto the back of the farm truck and we were just throwing handfuls of TEF out of this big canvas bag to finish planting the field. But yeah, that first year we just kind of did our best, see what worked. Harvest was insane, very difficult, but we've just learned more and more every single year and we are optimistic. We're optimistic. So
you could adjust the drills to be able to plant, and then at the whole other end of it, can you use a combine to harvest TEF?
Yep. So first you use a windrow to cut it and to lay it into rows. You pray for no rain, so it dries for 3 days about, depending, of course, on the weather, and then you pick it up with a combine.
And so you get some big bins, and at that stage, you got to figure you used to either sell it and bag it at that point, but then and before you started making your own granola, who would be purchasing the grain?
Yeah, we that was the hard part, was getting it cleaned, and you finally have, you know, totes of this product, and you're trying to find someone who not only knows what TEF is, but also knows what to do with it and wants to buy it. So it took us quite a while to find some people, but we ended up finding a miller who was milling it into the TEF flour, and he was selling it to Ethiopian restaurants. So that was incredibly lucky for us, and he's been a great partner to work with and learn more about TEF. He was the first one.
So you end up with a flour then, TEF flour, from the milling, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can bake with that. Can you bake almost anything that you would normally do, like with wheat flour? Could you do to make like a pie crust out of TEF?
You can. TEF is very dense, and so it's very heavy. So it's almost like using spelt or rye, but it's even denser than that. So what I was working with the flour and selling it on Amazon and hoping I could get traction with the you know, health food foodies out there. And so I was testing it out in breads and everything and finding that it's so dense, you have to, you know, sub about 20% of the weight of your normal flour amount with the teff. So, and I would add, you know, 2 or 3 tablespoons here or there just to make, you know, a heartier muffin or whatever bread, whatever you're making. But that's when I realized selling just teff flour, which is a virtually unknown grain. No one knows what to do with it. No one knows what it tastes like. Selling that was kind of intimidating to people. And so I wanted to bring teff to the market in a more approachable way. Something that people were familiar with and weren't intimidated by. And so I was making granola one day and on a whim just threw in teff, the whole teff grain. And the flavor came out just incredible because it's got that nutty flavor. And so it just added to layers of, you know, buckwheat and almonds and walnuts and teff. And so, started making that and selling to grocery stores. And that has just taken off, which is really nice and just a much better, I guess, product than the teff flour.
When you were discovering that you could make granola, what did you find? Did you have some sort of commercial kitchen available to you? Or when you started doing your first production of it, where do you make it?
Yeah, so we found, well, I shouldn't say we, it was really me because it was like this kind of crazy weird side project that I was doing. I just Googled shared commercial kitchen in my area of Michigan. And luckily, I didn't know how few and far in between shared commercial kitchen spaces are, but I found one in my town. And so I took the steps to get certified by the state and licensed and everything. And so I started baking in the kitchen pretty quickly. November of 2017, got my license that same month. And then in January of 2018, we got into our first grocery store. So it was pretty quick. I had a feeling this would do pretty well. And just because it's such a unique grain and such a unique story, and people connect pretty deeply with the story, with the idea, and especially now, of course, we couldn't have guessed the pandemic, but people love the underdog, the pivot, you know, the story of our farm and our family.
Now, it is gluten-free?
The ancient grain teff is gluten-free, and the granola is as well.
Well, that's a big one right there, too. And you know, at one stage, someone in my family was trying to eat gluten-free, and we actually found the best spot was a commercial kitchen where someone was making gluten-free muffins that were just fabulous, but they never were making it to the store. And we went to the source, actually, to the commercial kitchen on a Saturday at 2, and you could pick them up. And then they started selling them at farmers markets and some other places and getting them out there. So when you're making the granola and you're putting it into what, some sort of a plastic container or bag with a label that you had to develop?
Yep. So I found, and the commercial kitchen was great in this sense because there were so many small food businesses like mine. And so I went in knowing absolutely nothing, right? You start from knowing nothing about the food industry, and piece by piece, you kind of put together okay, this is what I need to do next. And so there was a bag supplier. I ordered a whole bunch of bags that I thought would fit the product, designed the logo stamp thing at the library computer, for whatever reason, not my computer, and, you know, printed labels at Office Max. It was very, very small in the beginning. I was making, you know, 30 bags at a time, which for me, I was like, oh my goodness, 30 bags of granola. This is so much granola. But of course, we've grown quite a bit since then. So now we're getting to the point, just last year, we invested in new packaging. And so, you know, getting printed, designed packaging and buying a new oven and really investing in the production side of things does take some time. So having that patience with myself is very important.
So how much life is there in it? I should say life, but as far as the length of time that the granola is good from the time you bag it before, you know, it has to be consumed, can it be a year?
That's what I was finding with other granolas. And that's what I didn't like. I was raised on homemade food and fresh food and fresh granola and fresh bread. So when I was making my granola, there was a 90-day date on it. And it also depends on the type of packaging that you have. So the bag that we had, I said 90 days, not knowing that that is such a short amount of time in the food world, especially when you're looking at, you know, shelf-stable products. 90 days is not very long. But when we invested in our new packaging, we added 10 more days. And so we have a 100-day expiration date, which is vastly different than what you'll find on the shelf. And in fact, in my earlier days, when I was kind of researching shelf life and that kind of thing, I would call the granola company. Hi, my name's like Heather Stanton. I made up a name. And so I'm looking at, you know, this granola. When was this granola made? And just asking them as a consumer, when did you make your granola? And if they did answer me, because a lot of times I would be kind of like laughed at and transferred until the phone call was like dropped or something. But a lot of times it was like 6 months to a year. Most of the time it was a year long expiration date, which was really disturbing to me that there are that many preservatives in there in the forms of sugars, or even if it's, you know, tocopherols or whatever. Those are, you don't need preservatives and food tastes better without them. So I stood by my decision to, no preservatives, nothing, and we don't dehydrate our product because that's usually what makes the product go bad. So with the water activity, it'll go stale. But
So now how much of the product is either farmers markets or online commerce or stores, health food stores, supermarkets? What's the mix of how you're selling it?
Mm-hmm. So we are mostly in grocery stores now. That's where more than 60% of our revenue comes from. And then the other, I would say 25-30% is coming from farmers markets, direct to consumer, in our online store, which we also have a subscription model. And so that's been fantastic for us.
Yeah, those subscription models, once they sign up, then you just send them what? Something every week from then on?
It's every month. So it's every 30 days, and they can pick how many bags they want every month. And that's really great to build that relationship with some of my customers.
I noticed that the stores I go to, that they're out here in California, I'm seeing granola that is more locally made. And I've tried some, and it's really good. It does seem a little expensive. I'm sure it takes a lot to be able to produce them, but often they have them in the area of the cereal aisles and sometimes on little pegs or something, you know, because they're usually soft bags rather than the facings you see with the cardboard. I see people doing that. What I've liked so far when I've tried them is that the granolas, they're individual formulas. You know, they've all got so much, they're able to see, I think, the creativity of the people that are putting it together. But I have to tell you, I don't think I've ever seen any made with TEF.
Yeah, we are the first people in the States to put TEF into granola. And as far as I know, we're the first people to use the whole grain in a product. So I've seen TEF in a handful of other CPG products or consumer packaged good products. And it's always as a flour. So I've seen TEF flour in cake mixes, but I just have never seen anybody using the whole grain. You know, a whole world of opportunity opens up when you look at the whole grain. I am just very inspired by it. So of course, like, TEF flour is useful and all, but I like the TEF grain. TEF is that because it is so small, there's no separating the bran and the germ apart from each other and the outer shell. Like the flour is the whole grain, which adds to the complexity of milling it. It is, I mean, we're finding that every stage of working with TEF is difficult. So milling it is difficult, but that's why in the beginning, we were planning on growing it, cleaning it, milling it, and selling it ourselves. And as soon as we learned how difficult it is to mill it, and I was having not a lot of success on Amazon with the TEF flour, we just outsourced that and said, you know what, to our miller, you just buy it from us and you do the rest of that sales channel. We'll just stick with growing, cleaning, and doing the teff, that part of the teff ourselves, and then putting it into the granola, of course.
How much of the teff you grow in your farm are you able to market through your granola versus going into other channels?
Very small percentage. We are not a giant granola manufacturer yet. The rest of our teff is being sold to our miller, but as well, we are now working with a grain broker to get into some larger, I guess we're looking at some bigger buyers now, I can say. So that's really exciting to us. And I guess, again, proof that people are looking to be more sustainable and looking at, I guess, a more diverse range of ingredients. So it's no longer just corn and soybeans going into our food. We're looking at a more diverse market in terms of alternative grains and seeds, which is amazing to hear, and it's just better for you. So
you're discovering some other grains too, right? Millet and buckwheat, and are you growing those on the farm? And I'm not sure whether those make their way into granola at all, but you are finding some other ancient grains to explore, aren't you?
Yeah. So from the very beginning of teffola, that's what I call my granola, teff granola or teffola. I use buckwheat in my granola. And so I asked my dad way back then if he could grow buckwheat for me. But of course, as a very practical farmer, he said he wouldn't grow it until there was a buyer for it outside of me, because I'm a pretty small purchaser. And so this grain broker, or I should just say broker, commodity broker, they were also interested in buckwheat as well. And so we tried it for the first time last year. Again, we planted an experimental, I think it was 13 acres, and it came up so well, and it was so much easier than teff. We're actually growing more of it this year. We're growing, 170 acres of buckwheat this year, and it's just coming up so beautifully. And of course, buckwheat has that gorgeous flower. And so, so we're growing more buckwheat, which is going really well. And we also tried millet this year, which is a bit more difficult. This is our first year with millet. So we're branching out and trying different things and just trying to see what fits and what the market is looking for. So buckwheat was a surprise for us. That around here, that's considered a poor man's crop. So it grows well in really bad soil, and not that we have really bad soil, but not a lot of people grow it anymore. But yeah, we're trying it again, and we're meeting more people who are interested in trying these alternative grains and crops.
Now, have you tried organic?
So we have not tried organic. We are a bit of a larger farm. So we're on about 2,300 acres, and 1,300 of that is tillable. We do practice other sustainable practices, I guess you could say. We do no-till, cover crops, crop rotation, and we've been doing those for decades. So we are not organic yet. It's time-consuming and pricey. And for a farm that is, you know, in the middle of a pivot, we are, you know, trying to get our feet settled before we take on another giant project like that.
So one thing I wonder, though, when you're producing these products, if you're surrounded by corn and soybean farmers that are using Roundup Ready seeds, is there any problem in kind of drift from the sprays that they're using, which they can put directly on their corn and soybeans farms, that might be able to drift into your fields of whether it's, you know, buckwheat or teff or millet, mm-hmm. and kill them because they aren't, you know, Roundup Ready and able to withstand, you know, the direct sprays, which again, the corn and soybeans people, but 90% are genetically engineered to be able to withstand those applications of pesticides.
We don't find that that's a problem for us. And whether it's because there aren't, you know, there are tree lines in the way or whatever, like we're in a pretty hilly area with quite a bit of woods, I guess. So we don't find that that's a problem. Our biggest problem by far is weeds and controlling the weeds. And on top of that, we're not selling or marketing our buckwheat or teff as organic or anything. I mean, it is, they are non-GMO, but we aren't marketing it like we don't spray this at all. And so, yeah, it's not much of an issue.
I'm wondering one other thing back on the farm level, that your dad's done this and you've done this pivot and you've gotten off of just being strictly corn and soybeans kind of rotation into all these ancient grains. Is he getting any converts, or is it still at that stage where the farmers are looking across the fence and scratching their head and saying, what the heck are they up to?
That first year, we definitely had a couple of calls, and across the field from the first year that we grew it, the guy across the field, he's actually a distant relative of ours. And he said that he would sit on the porch and just watch them try to harvest it and was just like, what in the world are you doing? But we have had more interest, especially recently as we are starting to actually need more. Teff is very time consuming and labor intensive. So we are looking to outsource or, you know, find other sources of it. And channel it through to our grain buyer. So what's great about the growing interest of these alternative grains and with our grain buyer is that we've had enough of it to invest in a gluten-free cleaning and processing facility. And so now we can clean the teff ourselves. We can dehull the buckwheat, dehull millet. And not only can we do that for our own crops, our own harvest, but we can also do it for other people. So if other people are growing buckwheat for people who want to, you know, dip their toe in the alternative grain market, so they don't have to invest in all the hunting and the searching and the head scratching that we did.
You know, one other thing I think about is that when you get to a bigger size of an industry, you have people start wondering, well, why is this good for me? Is there any research on the nutritional benefits of these ancient grains or teff in particular that distinguishes them from other foods?
Well, it's similar to any ancient grain, I would say. I mean, there's no such thing as a superfood. A superfood is a marketing term. The great benefit to the ancient grains is that there's a wide range of micro and macronutrients. So you really, I mean, teff is great for iron, calcium, protein. It's complex carb, lots of fiber. It's good like that. It's not like a silver bullet. You just want to have a wide range of these whole food plant-based ingredients.
Well, when you're ready to create the Teff Council of America, give me a call back. I've got some experience with that sort of thing. And
we might be getting there. We might be getting there.
I can really see ancient grains like yours at some of the American Dietetics Association's meetings and so forth. But many of the big marketers like Kellogg's and General Mills, and, you know, there's a lot of them that they're starting to get ancient grains products too. So you'll have a little competition, but you've, but also I think you have a niche. There's a lot of people that like the idea of being able to have something that's coming from locally. You know, you're covering, I was seeing on your website, which we ought to mention pretty quickly here, that you've got stores that are available. I think they're all in Michigan, but you can, even if you're not in Michigan, I can order it, can't I? Can I go online and order some of your product to try it, have it shipped to California?
Yep. So our website, we ship all over the country. And we actually did just get into a couple of stores in the Toledo area. So if you're there, check out the website. But the website is eatteffola.com. So eatteffola.com. And you can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Teff Chef.
Well, I think it's really great what you're doing. I think everybody's been talking stories about how the food system has to change and people have opinions about monocultures. And I think that to look at examples where people are really sustainably farming, trying different alternatives, and then have the connection like you're doing to take it all the way into having a consumer product, that's exciting, and really appreciate your sharing that story with us on Farm to Table Talk.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you giving me a platform to share our story. It's we're not geniuses by any means. Other people can definitely do this. We just have a pretty strong passion. So we're living it and working on it every day, which is a blessing.
It is a blessing, and it's a blessing that's making me hungry to try it too.
Well, we're just cooking 2 days ago. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to check out the website. Thanks again.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.